And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and on season two, I'm joined by legendary rock star Patty Quatro, where we take a deep dive into her Detroit roots, the indelible impact of her iconic musical family, her two pioneering all-female bands, The Pleasure Seekers and Cradle, hanging with her homeboys in Detroit Rock City, and so much more. So let's get started. So, Patty, on the previous episode, you told us the wonderful tale, pun intended, of your pet rat, Snidely. And I have so many questions because, as I've mentioned a lot, I'm an animal lover. And again, you were ahead of your time. I don't know anybody from that era who had a pet rat. Let me know, others, if you did. But Snidely the rat, exactly. So Snidely, the performing rat, I'm wondering. So you said you would walk into clubs when you were performing and he would hang out on your shoulder. You know, you're a very tall person, by the way. So there's that rat at about 5'10", right? Peering over, maybe, okay, a little bit less because he's not on your head. And you said you had him on a leash. How did that work? Did you make the rat leash? Do they have rat leashes?
I don't know if they had them back then. I think I must have bought something and adapted it to fit his little neck and whatever. I mean, he would go around the back of me to the other shoulder and stuff, you know, I mean, but that was a safe way to keep him. And I would keep him in the cage when I didn't take him on stage. That I didn't do.
That's what I wanted to know.
No, he was in the cage safe backstage.
Backstage.
We would play, yeah.
He's legendary to me now. And Snidely, of course, comes from Bullwinkle. He was the...
I think so. Yes.
And you said you grew up watching them. So I just, yes. Mr. Snidely now, Snidely the rat is going to be, I think, our mascot for these seasons. And so on a very, did you say that again?
Buried in Kansas, somewhere in a field in a gas station.
Well, to quote your song, what a way to die, Snidely.
What a way to die, exactly.
Well, one of the other things that you said in such brief passing and said so casually in the next episode was that one of your, as you call them, homeboys from Detroit was Mitch Ryder. And then you said in passing, he was a boyfriend. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to let that go. Would you please spill the tea on this?
Well, he's a good looking guy. And he was all about that blue eyed soul. He got a lot of attention singing the way he sang. And to me, they were sort of on the cusp, you know, with the blue-eyed type. It was still rock, but very soulful at the same time because of his voice. And yeah, we had a connection. And his drummer.
What do you mean you had a connection and then you just go skitter on to something else?
It was a connection in Detroit and then I was going on the road and nothing else happened with it. You know, we had our little connection and I loved the band. We played gigs with them. So that was fun. And then the more rockier band started coming in, you know, the harder music and stuff. So it evolved like it did in Detroit, all of these. And his drummer, Johnny Badanjic, oh my God. Fantastic drummer. He played with a lot of name people and he's still a good friend today. Yeah. Every time I go to Detroit, I see him. It's like, hey, it's old home week. We get in the taxi and guy turns up the radio and it's the whole taxi is bouncing. That's Detroit.
I love that old home week with your old home boys. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you said you played with Mitch Ryder and others. Okay. And so this is still as Pleasure Seekers.
Completely. Played with a lot of bands. The DJs would do live shows like Cobo Hall, the Autorama, whatever. I remember we posed in a monkey's car. They did a big promo with the Pleasure Seekers in the monkey's car. And Yardbirds, all these people, Sam the Sham, Paul Revere and the Raiders. I mean, if I gave you the list of who we played with, we would be here for an hour. Because we played with everybody. But the DJs would put us on those live shows that we started gaining. You know, they wanted to have the girl bands. So we played a lot of that stuff besides the teen clubs and the college circuit and all that. We were getting around as we were in the early Pleasure Seekers and private parties, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, I promised the listeners that that little tease of you reading all the bands and people that you played with, which could take an hour, we're going to give you that hour at some point. We're just going to be breaking up that hour because I will have far too many questions with each band that you played with. And so, but I want to go back a little bit because you're now playing with these bands, but it's still early pleasure seekers. But I'm still very curious, and I've heard other people who are very curious still say, how did this even just logistically happen, or even just realistically happen? You're underage, very much so, all of you. You're in a band called the Pleasure Seekers, which, for those who may not know that you're a teenage band, is quite provocative. So if there's an ad for an all-female band called the Pleasure Seekers, I don't know, it might be intriguing. And also, how did you go to these gigs? Did you have a van? Did you have chaperones? Did you have to have underage I or IDs because you were underage? All these little details I'm just so curious about. So fill in the scenes for us.
Okay, well, let's start with the earliest Pleasure Seekers, which was Nan Ball and Mary Lou Ball and Diane Baker and me and Susie. And we didn't need ID. We were playing teen clubs and colleges and all that. The only time we had a problem was when we played the Rooster Tail. And Susie, I mean, that was a club, and she had to put on a blonde wig. Photos to come. This long, stupid blonde wig. And Paul Revere and the Raiders were there for that gig. And it was pretty hilarious. So, but she had to fake it. You know, she couldn't use her name or anything. She had to be careful.
Wait. So she wore the blonde wig to go to accompany the ID, the fake ID, or no? Why did
She
she have
wore it to play. She had to wear this blonde wig and pretend to be somebody else. I have pictures. I mean, it's
Oh, I
hilarious.
can't wait. We can't
Yeah.
wait.
And I made fake ID. I mean, one of my hidden talents. I started making my own fake ID. So, I mean, I say I never drank, but if I went to a bar and I wanted to feel like, you know, I belong, I would have a rum and coke, and I would say barely put a drop of rum in it. You know, that's the only thing I ever drank. I hated every other drink. I just
You're
didn't like
such
them.
a party animal, Patty. My God.
Oh yeah, my dad was straight, and he used to say, you know, why would anybody drink? You have to learn to like it. You don't pick up a drink and automatically love the taste. And he was thinking in his brain, he said, why would anybody try to learn to like a drink? You know, that
He's
was
got a
his
really
thought,
good.
and that stuck with me.
He's got a good point, and it's the same thing with cigarettes. You have to learn to like smoking
To
cigarettes,
learn. Yeah.
not like
I
it's
just didn't
a
see the sense of it. Yeah, it was stupid. So, and we did have other people that helped with fake ID later too. I mean, I'll get into that. You know, mob connection. I mean, you're talking Detroit, you know, there was
Oh.
the mob was there, you know, we had friends that were on those sidelines and stuff. And I mean, we knew people, and it was like hush hush stuff, you know, but it existed. There was a fake ID thing there. You know, we weren't that stupid or, you know, unsophisticated that we didn't know this stuff went on. And my dad had educated us on, you know,
I
music and
love
what.
that.
I mean, he was a musician, so he was not worried about chaperoning us. I mean, we were 16, Nan and them were 17, Diane and Nan, and the girls were 15. But, you know, as we moved and were playing, another year went by and they were 18. You know, everybody could drive. We could drive ourselves. We would pile the equipment into the car and go to the gigs. And I remember, I mean, to skip a moment, Arlene, when she joined, we were on a frat house roof, and we had brought her in to replace Diane, which there was lineup changes going on because she was in college. And Arlene got so scared she ran off the stage. And Leo, her husband, had to push her back out there and say, get out there. And I mean, she was just completely new to it. She used to make fun of us practicing in the garage. She just thought, oh my God, they sound horrible. She would laugh with my mother, and then she ended up being in it in a key part. So we didn't need chaperones. We didn't need the ID at that time. It evolved and it was fine. And then my dad finally bought us a van, the Pleasure Seeker van. It was sleek. Thank God for his GM connection. And it had Pleasure Seekers written across the side. So that became our van for traveling with the equipment.
My God, that is so cliché to have a van with pleasure seekers on it in the late 1960s or in the
Yes, it was crazy.
Well, with that said, I mean, I'm laughing, but I love the visual work. You must have really been it a curiosity to the male fans with a name like Pleasure Seekers driving a band. I mean, do you have any stories?
It was a lark to us. We were playing, we were teenagers, just living our normal lives, going to school and everything. But it was a lark being able to go out and play these gigs and then come back home, go back to school. We didn't worry about it. And the guy fans, remember I called them gropies later in Fanny, but they were the college guys and they wanted to be close. They thought it was so cool. And I think they were very intimidated a little bit shy. They didn't really quite know how to approach us. So their way in was to say, oh, we'll help carry it in. We'll help set up, and that was their way to get in and get close.
That's actually quite clever of them,
Yeah.
I think.
And it was a big help. We didn't want to carry the shit. They would carry all
Absolutely.
the amps and everything in.
Well, I'm wondering, although you were teenagers at the time, but you talked about Fanny and that you called your Fanny fans at the time, the male fans, gropies instead of groupies. But one of the things that I had talked about, my dad was your manager in Fanny, Roy Silver, is that he found it fascinating that when male fans were able to see you backstage, that they were almost dumbstruck and didn't know how to hit on you. Whereas the reverse was the case if you were a guy band, girls were willing to throw themselves at the, at them. So I'm just wondering, granted, you were younger, but did you have that same experience in Pleasure Seekers?
Of course. I mean, in what universe would college guys not have hit on a good-looking female band that was going to play their party? I mean, come on, called the Pleasure Seekers. Of course. I mean, we some of us dated some of the homeboys or, just we were teenagers. We were dating. It was a lark. It was a lark until it became more serious and we started traveling more. And my dad felt we needed a proper manager. Not because he was scared, because he knew we could handle it all. He had that confidence in us. We were brought up very ballsy, very independent. We understood the biz from him. And, it was just, he just felt, if you're going to go out of state and do all this, you need a proper manager.
So I just want to clarify for myself, while Pleasure Seekers is performing, and now I'm not just talking in Detroit, I'm talking now outside the city in other places in
Yeah,
Michigan.
other areas of Michigan and
Right.
stuff.
So you're traveling unchaperoned and staying at hotels or motels or whatever it is, unchaperoned.
Some of them were day trips. If it was, maybe Flint or Ann Arbor, which is very close to Detroit, it's like an hour drive back. Like if it was a beer blast at a college from Ann Arbor, we could drive right back home. Often we could. If it was Grand Rapids, which is further across the state, maybe we stayed overnight. It just started slowly escalating as it evolved and grew more serious with us. And lineup changes started happening. So,
And I want to talk about lineup changes, but I also just want to clarify. So these gigs that are being booked for of Pleasure Seekers or for Pleasure Seekers, that's your brother Mickey booking these gigs.
yes, we'll get into making
Okay, we'll get into Mickey, but so he though is the person, your brother is the person who's booking these gigs. But at
yes.
this point though, he's booking your gigs, but at this point you're still without a manager because there was really
Yes.
not necessarily any need until you start going out of state. And then your dad said,
Right. And the lineup change happened. That was like a turning point when Arlene joined and her husband Leo became our manager. But Mickey pretty much took care of all the odds and ends, as he did with all the homeboys with his booking agency. He just did it all, sort of overlooked it for us. So Dad felt pretty darn safe. And mom didn't question any of it. She just sort of was the rock behind all the music,